is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving.
Oh, Hayward.
That's what I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show. We'd like to take this opportunity to celebrate the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., an American hero, and reflect on his message of unity and love for this country. I am your host, Nick Sesento, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, the mustache himself, Sam Sheehan, one of the finest analysts CLNS Media has to offer, as we will break down all of the action from tonight's 107-99 Boston Celtics win over the Miami Heat at TD Garden, extending their win streak to four games in a row, now having won, I believe, 8 of their last 10 games. If not 8 of 11, have to recheck the schedule to see what the exact breakdown is, but I believe 8 of 10 is probably accurate enough. And a 9-game home winning streak. Biggest bonus of tonight, I know a lot of fans probably had a question after the Atlanta game in the brief minor spat between Marcus Smart and DeAndre Bembry of the Atlanta Hawks. Marcus Smart was not suspended, fined, didn't pay attention to the amount that the fine was, just happy to see him playing for the Boston Celtics today. He was part of the Boston Celtics 107-99 win over the Miami Heat. A revenge win, if you recall, the last time these two teams faced off was 11 days ago on the 10th of January, where the Miami Heat beat the brakes off of the Boston Celtics 115-99 to kick off a torturous 3-game road trip in which the Boston Celtics lost all 3 of those games. But since that time, the Boston Celtics have gone on a 4-game winning streak. So this has been a season of streaks for the Boston Celtics, who came into this game 28-18. Good for 5th place in the Eastern Conference, having won 3 in a row, as I mentioned, extending that to 4 in a row with this 107-99 win over the Miami Heat tonight at TD Garden. The Heat, on the other hand, coming into this game at 22-22, 500 record, just like they left the Celtics a few days ago, 7th in the East, just as they left the Celtics a few days ago, having won 5 of their last 10. So 5-5 in their last 10. Classic Boston Celtics game. Boston Celtics started out hot. First quarter, outscoring the Miami Heat 33-23. Then the Miami Heat came rushing back in the second quarter, outscoring the Boston Celtics, and going into halftime tied. Celtics came out of the halftime into the third quarter with a 9-0 run, if not greater. I only listened to what they were telling me on the NBC Sports Boston broadcast, and they said 9-0 run. Started out hot with a 9-0 run. Then the Miami Heat came out in the fourth quarter, rushing with a 9-0 run of their own. The Boston Celtics had accumulated a 22-point lead in the second half of this game, and the Miami Heat fought all the way back, I believe, to tie. I'll ask my buddy Sam Sheehan in a second whether or not they tied or whether they came within 2. But they were pretty damn close. And the Miami Heat tried to sneak this game away from Kyrie Irving and the Boston Celtics, but could not. Again, the Boston Celtics victorious, 107-99, stretching their winning streak to 4 games in a row, 9 games at home. Just a brief rundown of the box score before I bring in my co-host, Sam Sheehan. Kyrie Irving with another fantastic game, proving why he is the leader of this team. 26 points and 10 assists to go along with his career high. 8 steals. He was shooting the gaps, playing the passing lanes, tipping balls away, sneaking up from behind, and just picking pockets. Kyrie Irving was active on both ends of the floor tonight. Jason Tatum, also active, 19 points, 5 rebounds. Marcus Morris, finally getting back to his old self. It seemed like Marcus Morris had fallen off a little bit, 17 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists and a steal. And Al Horford, average Al, Uncle Al, coming in with a double-double tonight, 16 points and 12 rebounds. 8 of 11 shooting. Efficient Al. We like efficient Al. Didn't hit any three-pointers. We don't like to see that. We like to see Al with a couple of three-pointers just to make sure that he stays confident shooting from deep. The only thing that kept the Miami Heat in this game was the bench outscoring. The Miami Heat bench outscoring the Boston Celtics bench 67-23. Deion Waiters balled out. 18 points for Deion Waiters. 13 points for Bam Adebayo. That and maybe the free throws, huge discrepancy, as is normal for the Boston Celtics, this jump shooting team. Celtics only shooting 10 free throws, making 9 of them. The Miami Heat shot 18 free throws, making 16 of them. So there's an extra 7 points right there if you're counting free throw balance. With that, I'm going to bring in Sam Sheehan. My buddy Sam, the mustache Sam, how you feeling about the Boston Celtics today? I know we've been kind of up and down with this team, both you and I. I know you were the first to melt down on the air about a month or so back, and I kind of tried to, you know, bring you back down off the ledge. And then sometime around, it must have been New Year's Eve, I lost my shiz myself after the Spurs game on New Year's Eve, and then subsequently during that terrible three-game road trip where the Boston Celtics just dropped stinker after stinker to the Miami Heat and then the Orlando Magic and then the Brooklyn Nets, who decided to use that opportunity to taunt Kyrie Irving, who was not even in the game, threatening the Celtics with the possibility that Kyrie Irving may leave us high and dry in the offseason. But since then, the Boston Celtics have cranked off a 4-game winning streak, which was, the highlight of which was the Toronto Raptors win, defeating the number one team in the Eastern Conference, the Toronto Raptors, pretty handily. So how you feeling today, Mustache? I mean, Sam, happy about the Celtics, feeling good about the Celtics? Have we turned the corner yet, or are you not buying into any corner turning at this moment in time?
I'm scared. I'm scared to commit one way or the other because, like, I can't, you know, it's just, it's like whatever you say, this whole Celtics season has just been a magic guy. You know what I'm saying? You think you've got a handle on it, and then you notice, like, a different angle, and it's just, it makes you dizzy. You know what I'm saying? You start, you know, adjusting your focus to sort of see the Celtics as the, you know, as a contender, as, you know, with the teams with one of the best point differentials in the NBA, as a team, you know, with an outstanding home record, as a team that has, you know, gotten some big wins against a lot of the, you know, the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And then, you know, all of a sudden it slips away and you see, you know, this Celtics team that, you know, yells at each other in the media and loses the 3 games in a row to a, you know, Orlando Magic team and a playing hard but under-talented Nets team. And it's just, I've just about given up on, like, you know, knowing what's going to happen. I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, does anyone – I absolutely could see the Celtics getting blown out on Wednesday by, like, 20 by the Cavaliers. And, like, I don't know, Kyrie will say that, like, I don't know, Jaylen Brown is actually the shoeless bandit who, like, stole a plane or something like that. And then they'll beat the Warriors by 40. On Saturday night. Like, literally anything is possible in the Celtics season. I don't even know if I, like, want to try making sense of it anymore just because of how erratic and nonsensical it has been. Now, like, even the Celtics, like, defense and offense, it literally, like, just comes and goes, like, night to night. Like, are the Celtics going to be a bad defensive team tonight? Are they going to be a good offensive team tonight? Like, in some ways it's good because – you can see the Celtics' very high ceiling, their championship caliber ceiling. But in the on the other sense, I don't think I ever remember a team with a, you know, sort of lack of identity or lack of knowing what they are the way that the Boston Celtics do ever really being a real threat in the playoffs. So I don't know. It's good to see the Celtics get back to their winning ways. I think it's pretty clear that the Celtics are, you know, I expect at this point the Celtics to finish up around at least third in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, I do expect them to be have at least one home court matchup. And, you know, but, the fact of the matter is this is a Celtics team that, you know, if they were to go on a losing streak, they could absolutely still – I still am not comforted in the thinking sort of removing from my my realm of possibility that Celtics could be losers of a first round playoff series. I think that's still in play at this point. But they, you know, at the same time, I'm also not totally panicked because at the same time, I wouldn't be shocked if you told me they were in the finals, you know, in 4 months. I'd absolutely see how that would happen. So once again, the Boston Celtics continue their Jekyll and Hyde routine. And, I was hoping I would know a little bit more about this team by the time we were finishing up All-Star voting, but it seems like that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, you used my favorite term. I think I actually used it during a show once myself, and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. This is the Mr. Hyde. And I agreed that Mr. Hyde being the bad guy and Dr. Hyde being the mild-mannered scientist or whatever, that this is the, you know, when the Celtics are playing bad, that they're the Mr. Hyde side of the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But then I kind of argued with myself, you know, often you find yourself speaking, to yourself on this show, especially when you're hosting alone on the holidays. And I asked myself if maybe Dr. Jekyll was not the if Mr. Hyde wasn't the guy that we actually wanted to be, because Mr. Hyde is actually aggressive and actually, you know, knows how to put his foot on his opponent's throats, whereas Dr. Jekyll is kind of a little bit more meek and passive. So I don't know. It all depends on your literary interpretation of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and whether or not you are a fan of the antagonist or protagonist. But definitely, if not Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, bipolar, and no disrespect to anybody that is genuinely bipolar. I know that it's something that's not easy to deal with, but this Boston Celtics team, it's not just that they can win some and lose some, it's that they'll win games that they, you know, that you would expect them probably not to win after, you know, given the circumstances of the record, given their, you know, their previous performances against really good teams, and then they'll drop, you know, complete fat stinking turds against teams that you would absolutely expect them to destroy. So there's really no way. It's even, you know, this is a prognosticator's nightmare, this Boston Celtics team. If you're a psychic or if you're somebody that likes to bet or predict on, you know, sports futures or sports, you know what I'm saying, betting who's going to, you know, win what or how far is a team going to bet, please do not bet your life savings on the Boston Celtics. If you have money to throw away and you're willing to risk it, fine, sure. But, I mean, not even Dionne Warwick and her psychic friends would get this one right. Miss Cleo's probably wrong. Even the magic eight ball, you'd shake it, and then the little triangle would pop up in the screen and say, I don't know what the F is going on here, because this team is just almost impossible to predict in terms of how they're going to perform one night, from one night to the next. And even within a game itself, we've seen not this most recent Memphis Grizzlies game, but the Memphis Grizzlies game a couple of weeks back where they fell down by like 22 or 24 points. And then because they literally sleptwalked through, you know, almost three quarters or two and a half quarters of the game, and then finally decided in the fourth quarter that, hey, Kyrie Irving's going to be a superstar, a superhero, and, you know, jump right back into a game and take over. And this, you know, that didn't happen against the Miami Heat. They tried. They may try to mount a comeback, the Miami Heat. I believe that was the Time Lord game where he basically changed the entire complexion of a game against the Miami Heat. After the Celtics had gone down by 26 points, Brad Stevens stuck Time Lord in the third quarter, midway through the third quarter, and the Boston Celtics actually made a decent run, but just couldn't seal the deal and close it out down in South Beach. But yeah, this is a team I can't tell you from one night. I think I said it after the Miami Heat game. I covered that game in the post game, and, you know, the question was, you know, are the Boston Celtics looking ahead at the Magic game? Is that a team the Boston Celtics can bounce back against? And I said, yeah, sure. You look at the roster on paper, and it looks fantastic. It looks like the Boston Celtics are going to, you know, run them out of the building. And I said, but with this team, you just don't know. And you just don't know. But I sure am happy after tonight with the Boston Celtics defeating the Miami Heat. What was the score again? 107-99. I am happy with the four-game winning streak. And Sam Sheehan, Boston Celtics absolutely play better at home than they do on the road. Yep. Nine-game winning streak at home. Have only won one game this calendar year on the road, I believe, if I'm to believe the in-game commentators. So I don't know. Do you have any of the stats? I tried to look them up. Yeah. I know it's something like maybe 16 and 5 at home or something like that. What is the record at home? Do you know, Sam?
18 and 5 at home. 11 and 3 on the road. That's the best. Lowest number.
11 and 13. Am I correct? 11 and 13.
Yeah. That's the lowest.
I didn't say 11 and 3 on the road. Damn, we're good on the road.
No. 11 and 13 on the road, yep.
Gotcha.
And they are the also, you know, in terms of, you know, already having your, you know, your losses in the loss column. Celtics are, you know, one game back in the loss column for the best home record, behind only, you know, the Bucks, Raptors, and Nuggets, who are, you know, of course, you know, three of the four best teams in the NBA. So, you know, that kind of tends to bode well for me, you know, in terms of just what the Celtics are. Celtics are also 20-10 in the conference, which, you know, something else that, you know, kind of bodes well for where they're going to be in the playoffs. But once again, you know, point differential. Celtics trail, I think, only the Bucks and the Warriors in point differential this year. And I know some of that is beating up on, you know, weak teams, but it's not like, you know, other teams don't get the chance to beat up on weak teams either. You know, the Celtics have, you know, 2-1 record against the Raptors, given both games were at home. I think 1-1 against the Bucks, both of those games were at home, but then also 2-0 against Raptors and 1-1 against the Pacers. So, you know, a lot to like for the Boston Celtics against the top of the Eastern Conference. You know, I just it's not been quite the victory lap of a season I think that we all expected, but it has at least shown that, you know, things aren't bad. They're not good, but they're not bad either. And, you know, it's going to be the first two rounds of the playoffs are not going to be, you know, as comfortable as, you know, we might have hoped coming into the year, is kind of what this season seems to be shaping up towards.
Yeah, and, you know, I kind of get the feeling that Brad Stevens, and the way that, you know, the season played out early, that Brad Stevens kind of made the conscious decision that he was going to, you know, run his lineups and reintegrate players into the lineups, you know, speaking of Hayward, and manage the injuries of, you know, and Kyrie also, who had the hardware taken out of his knee. And then, of course, the minutes for aging Al. You know, manage all of those things in kind of what I've been calling throughout the season maintenance mode, where, you know, the Boston Celtics, they know the talent they have. I think they may have took for granted a little bit, slightly, the ability with which they could kind of, you know, rotate the, you know, the lineups and limit the minutes and still win games. I think that, you know, there was a lot to be undertaken there with both reintegrating players like Gordon Hayward and also trying to, you know, find a rotation with minutes that made everybody happy, but then also find a way to maintenance or keep guys like Al Horford, keep guys that have, you know, injury issues, keep guys that you're going to need later on in the season healthy now by kind of limiting their minutes, limiting their role, not putting too much stress on them. But I think that there was a decision made early by Brad Stevens that was what he was going to do, that he was going to, you know, make a concerted effort to maintain the roster, keep it healthy, take it slow with Gordon Hayward, not push anything on him. And I don't think there was really even a choice when it comes to that, because Gordon Hayward is giving you what Gordon Hayward can give you. I don't think you can push him, you know, with you know, anything else. But, you know, the way that the thing has been managed is kind of like a, to me, I just see it as a maintenance mode, waiting to get into, you know, the playoffs, where the Boston Celtics will then have a fully healthy roster, a well-rested roster, a roster that's, you know, able to work with multiple different lineups. At least that was the intention, and I think we've seen some of the, you know, the bumpy road in figuring out, you know, just exactly how that was going to work, and it's brought some attention to Brad Stevens, who I think up until, you know, this season was essentially beyond or above reproach when it came to, you know, questioning his coaching decisions, his play callings, his rotation, whatever else it was. He had gained pretty much, you know, unreproachable status in Boston, and I think this season has brought him down, back down to earth just a slight bit because, you know, the Boston Celtics are underperforming, and you think Brad Stevens, given his, you know, his IQ as a basketball coach, and he's still one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in basketball, it's a difficult thing to manage, apparently, what they're managing now. And it was odd to me. I didn't expect there to be egos, because the roster didn't seem to lend itself to egos. Like, Jaylen Brown doesn't seem like a guy that would be an egotistical guy, and I don't think anything has shown me that he is. I wouldn't think that Terry Rozier would be an egotistical guy, and even if he was, I mean, it's kind of like you're coming off the bench behind Kyrie Irving. There aren't very many, you know, point guards in the league, you know what I'm saying, that wouldn't come off the bench behind Kyrie Irving. There's maybe five other point guards that may start over Kyrie Irving, if even that. So where is the ground for Terry Rozier or any of these guys to complain about minutes? But it seems that there's apparently some type of rift. There has been a rift, but I'm glad to see them playing again. 4-game winning streak. You know, they did defeat the Toronto Raptors. You just went down their record against the top teams in the East. And when they want to compete, when they need to compete, they can compete. We just have to hope that, you know, when it gets time to the playoffs, they're not going to have, you know, a full run through the playoffs with, you know, with 4 games at home every series. They're going to have to win some games on the road, and that's proven to be a tough out for this team this season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Celtics are still, you know, 5 games back in the lost column of Toronto, and, you know, 4 games back of Milwaukee, who, you know, analytically wise, Milwaukee has been far and away on the top team. The Raptors just kind of keep holding on to, you know, the vanilla record by wins and losses. But, you know, they're also resting Kawhi on pretty much every back-to-back. But I'm glad you brought up Brad Stevens, because I think it's a good thing to touch on real quick, Nick, that, you know, I think that part of the reason that Brad Stevens has received so much of the brunt of this is because, you know, Brad Stevens, kind of the rise of Brad Stevens was characterized by overperforming untalented teams. You know, I don't think there was anyone besides really, you know, Isaiah Thomas, who you could consider like an above average NBA talent on Brad Stevens roster, like his first 2 or 3 years in the league. I think maybe Marcus Smart, I guess, would be an exception, but he was also, you know, like a, you know, the direct result of the only year they missed the playoffs in the past, you know, we're closing in on a decade plus now. And, yep. You know, we saw, you know, people kind of got it in their heads. I think it's kind of one of the reasons why Brad Stevens didn't win Coach of the Year last year. Everybody goes down. You know, the Celtics once again lose some of that, you know, that talent. And the Celtics once again overperform with, you know, sort of elevating these, you know, mid to, you know, low end starter guys into starter roles. And, you know, you end up with a sum that's greater than, you know, the parts. And, you know, we're seeing kind of all the talent crunch come back together, and Brad Stevens hasn't managed it well. But we've also never really seen Brad Stevens, you know, manage any of that well. I mean, Eric Spoelstra, you know, is one of the better NBA coaches we've seen. And I think we've seen that a lot of times. And, you know, it's not like he's ever had like a overwhelming, you know, kind of stable of talent outside of those Heat teams. And they also, you know, really struggled in the regular season, especially their first year together. You know, I think the Warriors have kind of broken everyone's brains, because we all sort of forget about what what talent looks like, and what, you know, what it looks like to have a bunch of talented guys come together and to have that sort of high ceiling, because we're so used to, you know, teams like the Dallas Mavericks or the San Antonio Spurs or these other teams that are, you know, have great coaching, but also, you know, have a pretty clear hierarchy and, you know, structure to them in terms of, you know, talent. You know, nobody's going to confuse, you know, as good as Tony Parker was. Nobody's actually confusing Tony Parker as the reason why, you know, the Spurs won all those titles. You know, no one is confusing, you know, Mike Miller for the reason why the Miami Heat won all those teams. Nobody's sitting here talking about Brian Cardinal, you know, pushing the Mavs to the first, you know, big title. And I think that, you know, it's tough for a coach to sort of navigate all these guys who are hyper talented, because you know, the players have a point. Terry Rozier is having a bad season right now, and he's probably looking at, you know, he's probably lost, I'd say, at least $5 million a year with the way he's played this season. And, but you know, I'd be agitated too if I were Terry. You know, this is my life and this is my money. And, I've just sort of, I've regressed in this role, and all of a sudden, you know, it's not clear that all this money that was on the table for me is all of a sudden sort of drying up before my eyes. So if he was, you know, irritated, and, there's arguments going on there. Kyrie Irving was trying to sort of, you know, lay the hammer down, but there's, you know, been questions for, you know, because of the way he plays defense and how he exited Cleveland. He's always going to be fascinating to, you know, people in the media. So it's a very complicated situation. I don't think there's any question that Brad Stevens could have handled this better, and that Brad Stevens needs to share a pretty hefty, a pretty hefty slice of this blame for the way that the season has sort of, you know, gone sideways early on. But at the same time, I also don't think that this is necessarily an enormous indictment of Brad Stevens. I mean, people forget he's a young coach. He's got to learn too. You know what I'm saying? He's never really had to deal with anything like this in his coaching career, and it's always going to be hard the first time through. And, you know, let's be real too. Danny Ainge hasn't made this any easier on him either. You know, like, there's a lot of guys there's a lot of mouths to feed, and that's, you know, a byproduct of Danny Ainge, you know, sort of winning so many trades, but it's also created this problem.
Winning trades and hoarding assets. He's kind of, you know, he's been holding everything tight to the vest recently. I think the overwhelming consensus, though, and I mean, I don't think anyone would blame Danny for that, was, you know, let's run it back the way that it was last season with the addition of Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. And I think that, you know, most people wouldn't logically be wrong to say, hey, that sounds like a winning combination, because the team last year, obviously, and we say it every show, or we think at every show, you know, they made it to within 5 minutes of the NBA Finals the way that team was. I think the big difference is, and you mentioned Eric Spoelstra, and that's an interesting comparison of, you know, the two different types of coaches. Eric Spoelstra is good at, you know, allowing big names, you know, big stars, you know, guys that are, you know, bigger than the name on the back of their jersey, or bigger than the name on the front of their jersey, I should say, because, you know, LeBron James certainly is bigger than the Miami Heat. Dwayne Wade probably as well. Dwayne Wade is the Miami Heat, if you ask, you know, people. And I live down here in Florida now. I am a Massachusetts native, but, you know, have since moved to Florida. And anybody that knows about Florida sports, that, you know, the Miami Heat are Dwayne Wade's teams. Eric Spoelstra has, you know, is one of those coaches that has been good at, or has proven himself good at, during those big three days with LeBron James, at managing, you know, high level pro talent. And Brad Stevens, you know, came into the NBA and got his ticket punched to the NBA based on what he did at Butler, which was the exact same thing he did for the, you know, first several seasons in the NBA, was elevate players. And, you know, Butler is a mid-major, you know, college basketball team. It's not, you know, it's not a Duke, obviously. It's not a, you know, a Syracuse or a North Carolina or, you know, any of those teams. It's not even, you know, I don't even know. It's legitimately not a team you would expect to come out from, you know, the field of 64 and make it to an NCAA, you know, championship game. It just doesn't happen. And he did it with Gordon Hayward. And then you have Gordon Hayward, the same guy he did it with, coming onto this team, and you think, well, this would be fantastic. But I think last season's team looked a lot like a college team. It played a lot like a college team, in that you'd have one player, you know, blow up in one game, and then the other player, you know, kind of take off the next, you know, game. And there may have been egos or whatever, and everybody goes out there showing out, but there was enough ball to go around, because there wasn't a Kyrie Irving and there wasn't a Gordon Hayward there that, you know, that needed to be deferred to. They needed to get their touches. That were the clear-cut, you know, leaders, established players, all-star players on the roster. So it's, you know, Brad Stevens has to demonstrate that he can, you know, navigate a team that is not just a bunch of guys on on their rookie contracts. And that's basically what it was last season. Jason Tatum was a rookie. Jaylen Brown in his second year. Terry Rozier in his third year. You know, know, Marcus Smart in his fourth year. There was a team of rookies, and then there was Old Man Al. And as being and Old Man Al has always been on this team, I think, viewed as a facilitator. He's kind of like the grease that makes, you know, all the gears turn on this team. He's, you know, his ability to pass from the paint, his ability to pass from the top of the key, his ability to do things that other big, his ability to shoot, his ability to do things that other big men can't do has been one of the, you know, the mechanisms by which the Brad Stevens offense has been able to work. And now you have, you know, a Kyrie Irving who is, you know, who came to a separate team, who specifically requested to leave his previous team because he wanted a team of his own. He wanted to be the leader of that team. Then you have Gordon Hayward, who I don't think is as assertive. I mean, I'm not going to use terms like alpha male or whatever else it is, but I think Kyrie Irving is clearly 1A, and Gordon Hayward is kind of like the Robin. He's the 1B. He's the, you know, the second, you know, the second star. Even though it hasn't turned out to be that way, that's the way it was planned before everything kind of changed last season, and now it's, you know, adjusting to all of these things, adjusting to so many adjustments. But, you know, when you look at that, Sam, can you really, and I know that, you know, Brad Stevens has shouldered, you know, his share of the blame, and I think, you know, a coach always deserves some share of the blame, but can you really look at the situation the Boston Celtics have had to deal with? And I know that it seems like on the surface there's been a glut of talent, a glut of picks. The Boston Celtics have, you know, the future in the palm of their hand. They have the, you know, the whole world in their hands. You know what I mean? But can you really blame Brad Stevens? All the adjustments and all the adaptations and all the, you know what I'm saying, the adversity and different changes that have been made. Can you think of another coach in the league that would be able to transition and be able to manage a transition the way Brad Stevens has? From last season to this season, dealing with young players and now incorporating these veterans that were injured. I mean, what other coach would be able to do it?
Yeah, I mean, not without pissing someone off.
Exactly.
And ruining your young guys. Look, I mean, you know, I think that I think Spoelstra is kind of the only guy that could do that. You know, as great as Greg Popovich and you know, Rick Carlisle are as coaches, they're not exactly guys who kind of whisper to guys' egos, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think Rick Carlisle...
Yeah, we saw Carlisle was Rondo. That was the ultimate ego.
Yeah.
Carlisle was
right.
Rondo did not work.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think Terry Rozier would probably, like, be playing in Maine if Greg Popovich were here, you know what I'm saying? Like, just with some of the, you know, things that have gone on. And, you know, it's one thing to coach that way. You know, it's great, and it probably does get results on a game-to-game basis, but it's also, you know, the Celtics are still sort of in a futuristic, like, a future-centered mode. You know, the Celtics are, it's a little bit weird to say for a team that still has an outside shot to win the title, but they do have a lot of their assets still haven't, you know, totally matured. Like, you can't afford to just totally give up on Jaylen Brown. You know, Jaylen Brown's an important piece for the Celtics. No matter what you think of him, he's an important piece. You know, well, if you don't think that he's, you know, all that great, then, you know, maybe you think he's going to be, you still like to put him in the centerpiece for, you know, Anthony Davis. I think people who like to give Jaylen a hard time would even have to, you know, consider that. You know, you need him playing at a high level. So, you know, I don't think this tough talk style of coaching was ever going to go over well. You know, I think that Brad Stevens' big sin is that, you know, he kind of is a little too rigid and a little too hard to adapt with some of his lineups. And, you know, he will play, you know, he will sort of stick with lineups that clearly don't work, and seems a little bit more hesitant to, you know, really get away from some of those lineups he trusts at certain points. But, you know, I think he's found the right solution, which is, you know, starting Marcus Smart, riding a hot Marcus Morris, and, you know, sort of seeing where this goes. Let me ask you something, Nick, because I wanted to I think we're heading for something interesting. Marcus Morris, he kind of righted the ship a little bit at the end of the game. We're starting to sort of see him. He's been a little bit cold as of late. And, you know, I think, well, myself especially, I've been kind of bracing for the, you know, Marcus Morris sort of, because I love Marcus Morris.
The flattening of the curve, the return to the mean.
Right. Like the 50-40-90 club was probably never going to be a realistic option for Marcus Morris. But
hey, Sam, just real quick. Remember when Jay Crowder was about to join that club and then petered out at the same – just about the same time Jay Crowder was about to join the 50-40-90 club? Same thing. Brace for it.
And I think that that's kind of what happens when you become that, you know, that weak side corner filler, you know, small forward in a Brad Stevens system. And I'm going to be interested to see what happens if that, you know, takes a plunge a little bit more. And, you know, especially if it coincides with Jaylen Brown sort of rediscovering his stroke and, you know, not doing things like turning the ball over a bunch of times. Or, you know, Gordon Hayward, who's, you know, continues to make strides pretty much every game. You know, he was a little bit quiet out there tonight, but I thought, you know, he looked good when he was, at least when he was attacking, and he looks a lot better than he did, you know, say 3 months ago. So what do you think, how do you see that resolving by the time we get to the playoffs, Nick? Do you think that Marcus is still in there? Do you think that one of these guys has reclaimed their starting spot?
I think if Jaylen Brown can, you know, and he's looked, you know, I don't have the box score in front of me anymore. I pulled up the future schedule so we could finish out the show probably talking about what the schedule looks like in advance. But if Jaylen Brown can continue to have decent games the way he's had in the recent, you know, winning streak, he's had, you know, some, you know, a few pretty decent games. I mean, they haven't all been fantastic, but he's had, you know, some pretty decent games. I think Jaylen Brown offers you a little bit more. I think Jaylen Brown offers you a little bit more, maybe defensively, than Marcus Morris. Not that Marcus Morris is a bad defender, but I think Jaylen Brown maybe offers you a little bit more, you know, like athletic lateral defense. You know what I'm saying? Whereas Marcus Morris is more that, you know, big guy that uses his size to play. You know, they're just different types of defenders. But I think Jaylen Brown would fit back in with that roster or with that starting lineup. Maybe. As well, if not better, if Jaylen Brown can return to, say, for example, the form that he had last season. He was fantastic last season. I mean, he is that player. It's just a matter of getting him out of there, getting it out of him, getting him to play that way. Whereas Marcus Morris, I think, is better adapted to coming off the bench and being that kind of spark off the bench that Jaylen Brown just hasn't necessarily been able to be for most of the season. Because both Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier have been the two players that I think most of us at CLNS, when we talk about, you know, the adjustments to the new lineups and the new rotations and in the new minutes, that, you know, Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown have kind of had the worst go of it in terms of adjusting, in terms of adapting, in terms of, you know, absorbing their, internalizing their new role. Because, you know, Terry Rozier, if the guy, you know, Kyrie Irving goes down for a couple of games with a cornea scratch, Terry Rozier comes in and he has, you know, some, you know, some of his better games, you know, in the starting lineup. I mean, why is it that he can't do that, you know, coming off the bench? And maybe it's one of those situations where a guy like Jaylen needs to get in there as a starter, play with, you know, play with some better players, like the, you know, there's always the collateral effect or the tertiary effect of, it's not, we're looking at these players individually sometimes in a, you know, microcosm or kind of like, you know, in a, you know, in a bubble where, you know, maybe Jaylen Brown, you know, once the, now that the mix has kind of been established and, you know, Marcus Smart is that guy that kind of, you know, was the key to getting the starting lineup to work efficiently, you know, having Jaylen Brown play with Kyrie Irving, play with, you know, the other starters, might elevate his game, because there is a benefit to being on the court with Kyrie Irving and being on the court with, you know, the other starting players, is that you're playing with players of higher caliber that draw, you know, greater attention. Kyrie Irving obviously draws the most attention of anybody on the team, and that, which then allows you to open your own shot and get your own shots. Do I think that's going to happen? I don't know, because I think Brad Stevens has been, you know, the one adjustment that he made this season that I think saved the season was moving Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart especially into the starting lineup, because it's proven, you know, that unless you're maybe the Golden State Warriors, you know, having a team that's full of guys that all need shots and all want the ball, and putting just the five best players on the court kind of with only like a slight, you know, consideration for position and a slight consideration for size. Well, you know, Jason Tatum's a little bit taller than Jaylen Brown, so I'm going to put Jason Tatum at the power forward. Ha, ha, ha. And it doesn't work that way. It didn't work. That lineup that, you know, that everybody thought was going to be the death lineup for the Celtics, the Al Horford, Jason Tatum, you know, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving lineup, that lineup just didn't work. But you put Marcus Smart in that lineup instead of Jaylen Brown at the shooting guard, and it sure does work, because you need a guy that's not out there looking for his shot. You need another guy that's out there looking to pass first, looking to throw that lob, looking to do some of the glue things that, you know, weren't getting done. And Marcus Morris is another guy that's willing to, you know, sacrifice and be kind of like an edgier type of, you know, player. And that edge, and I think, you know, this is a nice transition, because we've talked about Aaron Baines in the past several games since he came back. Aaron Baines is another guy. You need guys like all of those guys. And I think we've seen, coming off the bench especially, the difference in bench play, the difference in rebounds, the difference in toughness, the difference in grit, the difference in heart that this team has now that Aaron Baines is back. Not that Aaron Baines is, you know, the linchpin to the team, but when you have three players on your team, Marcus Morris, Marcus Smart, and Aaron Baines, that are kind of like the scrappy guys, and one of them goes down and he's your basically your only scrappy, you know, big man, your only scrappy, you know, true big, you know, then there's a hole there. And we saw that hole manifest itself with the Boston Celtics. So, you know, you kind of have to have – it's not just a – you know, throw the best talent out there, because Jaylen Brown is a better athlete, I think, than Marcus Morris. But does he have the ice-cold veins that Marcus Morris has when it comes time to taking those shots that only Marcus Morris has, you know, really been able to take this season? Well, not only Marcus Morris, but do we know Marcus Morris has been able to do? Maybe sometimes you just need an extra adult out there on the court. Not that, again, I don't say that in any way, shape, or form negatively that any of the other players are kids, but Marcus Morris is a little bit older, a little bit more of a seasoned veteran. You know, he offers a little bit more in that aspect. You have Kyrie, Marcus Morris,
he's definitely
Al Horford.
A man.
yeah, he's definitely a man.
He's not. Yeah.
He's Marcus Morris Sr. He's Marcus Morris Sr. But I think, yeah, is it going to happen? I think for a number of reasons, and I don't think it's just talent. I think you have to also consider personalities. You have to consider the intangibles. I mean, if anything has been proven, is that Marcus Smart proves that intangibles are, you know, especially to this Celtics team, almost as valuable as, you know what I'm saying, the stats and the box score. You know what I'm saying? And you need some of those players. So it really depends. Jaylen Brown can look fantastic, but maybe Jaylen Brown just, you know, he proves himself. Maybe he plays so well that he proves that, hey, we want to keep him on the bench because he's doing such a good job coming off the bench. That's a possibility too. Because when the bench can come in the game and at the very least not lose any momentum from what the starting lineup gave you, that's basically all you can ask for of a bench. And if you have a bench that can build on it, then you have a superior bench. You have a solid bench. And, you know, that if Jaylen Brown is, you know, maybe part of the key to the Celtics turnaround is not just putting Marcus Smart in the starting lineup, it's taking Jaylen Brown out of it and having Jaylen Brown's talents on the bench, where he can, you know, use his talents, use his specific things. Maybe it's something that bench unit, that second unit needed, that Jaylen Brown is able to give them, even if it hasn't been consistent thus far. If that's about as nuanced an answer as I could possibly give you to your question of if anybody earns their way back. And I know you probably wanted something more solid. I could have just said, yeah, Gordon Hayward's getting put back in because he was an all-star. There's a hot take for you. Gordon Hayward will eventually be a starter at some point.
But the thing is, I would actually kind of disagree with that, because, you know, I think Gordon is, you know, more suited to be your diamond player on the floor, you know, and I think that we've seen what a good distributor Gordon is. You know, it's sort of
one of his
secret talents, you know what I'm saying? More than his scoring, which clearly isn't back yet, and, you know, we've seen times where he's struggled a little bit more on defense versus, you know, what I think of as being Jaylen's sort of the thing that Jaylen really brings to the team is something that no one else on the team really has, which is explosiveness and a willingness to attack the rim and kind of finish through contact.
Exactly.
You know, the Celtics don't have anyone else. Nobody really shoots free throws on the team. All the team's scorers kind of shy away from contact. You know, Kyrie Irving has these playground style, you know, finishes that are just unreal with crazy English or these lights out shots. And Jason Tatum just, you know, with smoothness and footwork and just sort of fadeaway shots, and he'll just sort of kill you, you know, in the mid range or from long range. Now, nobody really has an A calling card of attacking the rim besides maybe Marcus Smart. And that's, you know, literally just because he's one of the worst shooters, you know, was, I should say, one of the worst shooters in the NBA. He's really corrected that this year. But I think the only time I've seen Marcus kind of attack the rim very hard was when Kyle Lowry was kind of hurt and down under the rim in the Raptors game. And, like, Smart kind of used the opportunity to, like, run in and, like, basically, like, give the people's elbow to Kyle Lowry laying under the bucket. So that's pretty much the only time I've seen him, like, attack the rim with great gusto. So to kind of, you know, to more get to the point here, I think that, you know, the Celtics, Jaylen really brings something that the Celtics don't have and can't really get anywhere else readily, even through trade, you know. And I think that they've got to be smart about how they handle Jaylen and his confidence. And, you know, because I think he's ultimately going to decide the ceiling of this team, whether it's, you know, as an asset through a trade or, you know, as, you know, one of the guys who can power through, you know, get named one and, you know, sort of reestablish, you know, the Celtics scoring in the, during these times when they just can't buy a bucket and the jump shots just aren't going.
Yeah, I think you, that's a fantastic point. I think you bring up an interesting thought that just kind of crossed my mind. Jaylen Brown kind of is like the bridge. He bridges that gap between the, you know, the starting lineup that has guys that can get to the rim. Jason Tatum does finish at the rim occasionally. I know he's still more of like, you know, let me do this step back here. Let me give you this fadeaway here. Let me show you this finesse here. Jason Tatum is definitely more of a finesse guy, but he can. I mean, he dunked on, you know, the King, for God's sake. I mean, what more can you say? And, of course, Kyrie Irving, not a physical finisher. You know what I mean? But can finish at the rim. He's a spectacular finisher. And then you have, you know, in Al Horford, who, you know, has, you know, a semblance of a post game. He's a solid post player. He's not, you know, that's maybe not where he wants to be at this point in his career. He maybe likes to settle for some of the, you know, flaring out and hitting the jump shots, or, you know, cutting to the wing and hitting those shots, as opposed to, you know, banging down low all game. But he can do that, which is a means of creating his own offense. And Jaylen Brown is one of those guys that can create his own shots. He can get, when he gets, you know, he doesn't have the greatest moves off the dribble. He's not, you know, hitting you with hezzies, but if you get him with a good pass and he's going downhill, he's attacking that basket, and he's that guy in that second unit that isn't really, you know, the second unit isn't really a basket attacking unit. I guess Terry Rozier does try to attack, but he's a small player, so it's, you know, you can't really rely on him to constantly be doing that, and when he, you know, constantly be attacking the basket and finishing through contact. Although I think that he's another guy that can, you know, create his own shot and get to the rim. So there's a couple of them there. But Jaylen Brown is kind of like that guy. He bridges that gap. He has that, you know, the defensive capabilities. He has the athletic capabilities, and he has the ability to get to the rim. And that's something that I think you need, is somebody that's going to create free throws. But you're absolutely correct. For the team that, you know, has guys like Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown is the only guy, really the only guy that takes, you know, a significant number of free throws a game. And it's unfortunate that until recently it doesn't seem like he's been hitting, you know, a consistent number of them. At least in previous seasons he's had issues with shooting those free throws. But you're right, he gives you something that other players don't. And that maybe that, like I said, there are multiple, you know what I'm saying, ways you could figure that one of these guys, Jaylen Brown, probably getting back into the starting lineup. I agreed with you. I just mentioned that hot take about Gordon Hayward getting back in the starting lineup because that's what a casual fan would say. Well, it's Gordon Hayward. He's getting paid max. He's the former All-Star. Let's put him back in the starting lineup. And I think that thought process is what developed that original starting lineup for this team, and that thought process didn't exactly work. But you know what, Sam Sheehan, before we finish out this show and look at the schedule ahead, I'd just like to remind you.
We got to get just to this. Like to I'm itching to talk about this huge game the Celtics have next.
The huge game the Celtics have. the huge game, which is when they might live. They might lose. You never know, because you can never tell with this bipolar Boston Celtics team. But before we get to that, I'd like to talk a little bit about hair. What do you think about hair? What's your? I know you're good with the hair
on
the
face.
The facial hair. That's right. You have. Has it extended out into kind of like Iron Sheik type handlebars yet, or Dolly handlebars, or are you still kind of just going with the 70s porn stash type look right now, Sam?
I'm going with what I can grow. I've literally haven't shaved it, and it's still as weak as ever. So I think that the porn stash is about as good as I'm going to be able to get. But I feel like you might have would you say that you have a solution to, you know, maybe some other places I could make up for that? It's hair-wise. You know, maybe I could do something with some of my other hairstyles.
Some of your other hairstyles? Well, you know what? Me personally, I don't have any options. Well, I do have options on my hairstyle, but none of them are good, so I just shave it off. But for those of you that are lucky enough to still have your youthful locks, there is a place that could probably help you out and maybe augment your, well, maybe not augment, but let's say add to the mystique of the mustache. They could probably trim up the mustache and make it look good too. Maybe even give you some tips on how to, you know, help it grow. For me, my mustache never grew. It was always the beard. I have a full beard, but the mustache, it grows. It just doesn't grow as nicely symmetrical as yours does. It kind of just goes everywhere. So I just trim it down into a nice little thin pencil, and then I have the big beard after that. But somebody that might be able to help you is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company on the North End. You ever heard of that place, Sam?
I have. A wonderful establishment from what I've heard.
And I'm sure you've heard that it is the heartbeat of Boston's North End, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand, Aaron the Man Bun Baines, and of course, all of your favorite celebrity hosts of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show. We all get our hair did at Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, which is more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's also a tourist attraction. Imagine that. A barbershop is a tourist attraction. You want to find out what it's like on the north end of Boston or what Boston life is like in general. You just stop into Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. You sit down in one of the chairs. Even if you're not going to get your hair cut, even if you're not going to get a tattoo, you just start shooting the shit and, you know, you find out what's going on in the north end. It's a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people that visit the north end of Boston throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a north end landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street on the north end of Boston, Sam Sheehan. And with that, I think we beat the Miami Heat game to death. The Boston Celtics destroyed the Miami Heat 107-99, accumulated a 22-point lead in this game before the Heat made a minor comeback attempt, which was stifled and squashed by the man, Kyrie Irving, the point guard, Uncle Drew, and his merry band of misfits, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, Marcus Morris, and, of course, Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward on the bench contributing their combined 13 points, because that is the epic performance that we get from our bench players. 107-99, Boston Celtics defeat the Miami Heat, but they have a very challenging matchup. This would have been on national TV, on ESPN, ESPNU, ESPN News, ESPN2, The Deuce, ESPN3, ESPN+, ESPN Deportes, and probably ABC and ABC Sports and all the other channels.
ESPN8, The Ocho as well, all of them.
The 20 Ocho, the 155, whatever it is. This game would have been showed on every single channel. The Boston Celtics hosting the Cleveland Cavaliers this Wednesday. Sam, can the Boston Celtics overcome the insurmountable odds of their nemesis, their Eastern Conference rivals, the Cleveland Cavaliers? Is it possible? Is there enough time between now and Wednesday afternoon or Wednesday evening at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday night for the Boston Celtics and Brad Stevens to devise a plan to defeat the almighty reigning Eastern Conference champion Cleveland Cavaliers? Sam.
Well, you know what's funny? Hubert of Riffs, friend of the show, the Riffs man. He told me that, he pointed out to me that we're basically the Cleveland Cavaliers from last year at this point, where we're having an awful regular season and we're just constantly embroiled in drama and unnecessarily, and everyone's mad at each other. And I think that we've got to kind of own that, that we've sort of morphed into this, this Cleveland Cavaliers pseudo contender ball of drama that also is just hyper talented. And, while they can't get out of their own way, sometimes they're also just too talented to really ignore. I really think that if you told me to pick which of these games the Celtics are more likely to win and which one they're more likely to lose, I might say the Celtics are more likely to win the Warriors game than they are to win this Cleveland game, just because I've seen the Celtics get up for stiff competition at home, and I've seen them absolutely just some sort of nasty dog pie on the floor against some of the dregs in the Eastern Conference. So, I really think, we're going to see you can't really hope to stop Chetty Osmond. You can only hope to contain him. So I think that as long as they kind of keep him in check, the Cavaliers won't get too out of hand. On a serious note, I think that, you're going to need to protect rebounding is going to need to be key between Larry Nance and Tristan Thompson. The Celtics are going to need to, keep an eye on things. But I think if they, play the same way that they did tonight, they can probably walk away with the win against the Cleveland team that really has no interest in winning NBA games this year. They are full speed ahead for Zion, it looks like to me.
Yeah, I'd really like the Boston Celtics to somehow be able to squeeze that guy out of the NBA draft lottery. I don't know what pick would be the closest to getting us there. Would it be the Kings pick at this point? I mean, which one would possibly get us?
I guess the Kings pick, but the Celtics would also need to do some sort of – they need to have some Laramie Tunsil-style video leak, of Zion, decapitating someone with a scythe in order to, get him to fall. And even then, I still think, the Knicks would pick him at four. It's not like he would fall. He'd have to do – something crazy would have to happen for him to fall to the Celtics range. But, I think that with him, with the flattened lottery odds, I don't think that the Cavs have any real interest in winning these games. But, but at the same time, the Celtics have got to keep their eye on the prize and one game at a time and not look too far ahead to the weekend's, big matchup against the Warriors that I'm sure everyone kind of has circled on their calendars.
Yeah, that is the game of the week, so to speak. The game of the new year thus far. Everybody's really wanting to see that game. That was the preseason for most quote unquote analysts or quote unquote experts or most whatever. That was kind of the prediction. You even had, I believe it was Steph Curry, making references to the Boston Celtics that we're only watching one team from the Eastern Conference. And, I don't know if the Boston Celtics actually, smelled their own, odor, or if this, there's something else going on that, that they didn't gas themselves up too much. But here it is happening. I mean, the Warriors maybe gassed themselves up a little bit much as well, because last I checked, the Warriors weren't the world beaters everybody thought they might be, although I did see a nice dunk in the highlights from Boogie Cousins. I didn't pay that close attention, but I did see the Boogie Cousins dunk his first points as a Golden State Warrior. I don't really care all that much about that. We'll see what happens on, I guess, what day is that? If it's Wednesday for Cleveland, then it must be Saturday. Perfect, because it's a nationally broadcast game on ABC. Just to close the show out, Sam, the Boston Celtics kicked off game one of their five-game homestand, 107-99 win over Miami Heat tonight. Cleveland coming into town Wednesday, and then, of course, the Golden State Warriors on Saturday. And then after that, Brooklyn and Charlotte at home in Boston. So the next four games, since the Miami Heat is already in the books, how do you think the Boston Celtics are going to fare on this five-game homestand? Give us a number. What do you think? 3-2, 4-1?
I think 4-1. I think 4-1 probably feels like the right mark to me. I mean, I don't have the Celtics schedule right up in front of me right now, but I think the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I just told you, man. I'm just in this. Yeah. I'm messing with you.
Yeah. It's the Cavs and then the Warriors.
Cavs, Warriors, Nets, and Hornets.
Yeah, but I mean that feels like three. You know, I think the Celtics could beat the Warriors, but then probably drop one of these games. It feels like the Nets. I mean, the Nets have already surprised us once, but it feels like they could do it again. You know, they're really on a hot streak right now. You know, especially if D'Angelo Russell, possibly Eastern Conference All Star.
You're a D'Lo fan, huh?
I think he'll end up being in the All-Star game for the Eastern Conference, which sounds crazy, but it's what we're looking at right now.
I think he's a better player than some people give him credit for. I think that issue that he had with, I don't even remember who it was that he said something to somebody about somebody's girlfriend or something. Nick Young must have been who it was.
Yeah,
Iggy Azalea, and he said something. Yeah,
no,
it says something ridiculous about,
cheating on his phone. Yeah,
just would like to see the guy live that one down and know on the internet that's kind of like, you know, and the kid has, you know, he does have some, you know, decent game. He's not really one of my favorite players, but I know that he has more game than he's often given credit for because, you know, that type of thing is very much frowned upon by the generations of young people that, you know, follow, you know, people like Nick Young. You can't. Yeah, it's none of his. It was none of his business. But you know, he lives past those things. So, you make mistakes and then you come out and you know it wouldn't make me upset. It'd be the greatest comeback story after the Derrick Rose getting voted into the All-Star game for the Western Conference. I think that's a nice story right there. I think that's one of those heartwarming stories that you just like to see. It's almost as surprising as Roy Hibbert becoming an NBA All-Star. I mean, who the hell was Roy Hibbert, and how did he become an All-Star? That was like a rolling trash can on the court, and he was an NBA All-Star one year. So, you know, and Derrick Rose, definitely happy that he would make it back in there. D'Lo, yeah, if he makes it, that'd be cool. If not, you know, my heart's not going to bleed for him all that much. But, anything else for Sam Sheehan on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day? Any other thoughts about the Miami Heat, the future schedule, the Boston Celtics in general? I know that you sound fairly well adjusted. No ledges tonight. We're kind of just taking this win. Win the way that you take any win.
Yeah, let me put it this way. I've put the gun down, but I've put it back in the drawer. Like I haven't thrown it out. I still have my panic button right here to smash. I'm not putting the panic button all the way away, but I have taken my finger off of it at least for the time being.
I feel like you're triggering me with some kind of pro 2A argument here. So we're just gonna. I'm just joking. we're gonna leave it at that. I agree with you. I'm just kind of like wait and see. The Boston Celtics, like you said, they could lose by 30 to Cleveland and then beat the Golden State Warriors by 20 on the very next game. It's just the way the Boston Celtics have been this season. With that said, just to wrap it up for everybody, the Boston Celtics defeat the Miami Heat. Where did I put that piece of paper? I keep forgetting the score. 107-99 tonight at TD Garden. Next game will be Wednesday, January 23rd, as the Boston Celtics host the Cleveland Cavaliers at TD Garden. With that, we'd like to remind everybody that today is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and I'm not a big holiday guy. As you may have known, I was here on the airwaves both Christmas Day and New Year's Eve filling in those shifts that nobody else wanted because you know they pay me overtime at CLNS Media, but this is one of those holidays that I think Americans and the rest of us should absolutely appreciate. So with that, I'd like to leave you guys with some words from the Honorable Dr. Martin Luther King. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over that. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say, we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around. We aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.